We're in chapter 6, 2 Kings chapter 6. One other person that I just remembered we need to pray for, and I'm sorry I forgot, we need to continue to pray for Nicole, that she would hear back and that they would grant her the ability to become a citizen of the United States. That's what she's trying to do and has been trying to do for a long, long time. Most of y'all know that now. And she has been through it, trying to get all the stuff done. And just listening to her and talking with her, I'm just telling you, I don't know how she's even sane, really, just having to go through what she's had to go through in this whole process. And to just have to wait day after day after day after day and know that you could get back no as an answer. That's just a tough place to be right there. So y'all don't forget to pray for Nicole. We're in 2 Kings chapter 6. We're still studying about Elisha the prophet. We will be for a few more weeks anyway. And we're down to verse 24 in this chapter. And it says in verse 24, "And it came to pass after this," the "after this" being a reference to the things that we just read about, the previous verses in this chapter. "And it came to pass after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered all his host and went up and besieged Samaria." Now, Samaria was the headquarters, you know, for the king of Israel. That's where he stayed at the majority of the time. And the king of Israel at this time is a fellow by the name of Jehoram. You read that back in chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. J-E-H-O-R-A-M. I guess probably the significant thing about him is that he was the son of Ahab. And y'all remember Ahab, right? Ahab and Jezebel, those two godly people in the Bible. Well, he is the offspring of that demonic duo. And if you remember from what it says about him, he wasn't as bad as his father. He didn't go as far down that terrible trail that his dad did, but he was a pretty bad guy himself, a wicked man. And this Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, brings his army there to where he's at in Samaria, and it says they besiege the city, which if you look that up, just by definition, it means to surround with armed forces. So he brings his army, and they surround the city. And generally, if you read in the scripture about these besiegings, and there are several of them mentioned in the Bible, but if you read them, you see that they would come there and besiege a place, and their intent was to just set up and stay there until the people inside the city got so desperate that they would give up. They would surround the city and just cut everything off to where nobody could go out or come in. They couldn't get supplies, whatever it was they needed. And you can imagine if that went on long enough, what would happen? Things would eventually run out. Food would run out, probably water. Lots of things would get scarce, and the people would become extremely desperate, as we're going to see right here in this passage. But that was the whole point of besieging the city. It was just to set up and stay there until the people either died of starvation or privation or whatever it was, or they came out and surrendered. But that was the whole idea. And it says in verse 25, "And there was a great famine." Now, how long they besieged the city before it got really bad, I don't know. Obviously, some time has to go by for it to get really bad. But at some point, because of them besieging Samaria, you have a great famine. And it says, "Behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 40 pieces of silver, and the fourth part of a cab of dove's dung for 5 pieces of silver." That's done got pretty bad. Now, y'all tell me, I had it one time, but I forgot it. Is an ass, is that a donkey or a mule? The donkey is the jackass. And the mule, that's like a cross between a donkey and a horse. Okay. Well, they're talking about donkeys here then. There's a reason I asked that. Because it says, until an ass's head. Now, you think about it. First of all, when I get ready to eat meat, donkey ain't really up there on the list, you know.
Come on.
That ain't, I don't think, you know, let's find a good restaurant that sells donkey, you know. Or let's go to the store and get the backstrap of a jackass and eat that for supper tonight, you know. But look here, they're not even talking about what you might consider to be good meat on a donkey. If there's a such thing as good meat on a donkey, they're not even talking about good meat on a donkey. They're talking about an ass's head. Okay, it's got so bad, they're starving to death is what's going on. The food's run out, and they're growing desperate here to the point that they're willing to eat an ass's head. And notice the value, okay? An ass's head is sold for 80, which is 80 pieces of silver. That sounds a little high to me, you know, for a donkey's head. That's a little more than, what's that? No meat. Yeah. Might can get, like Dennis said, get some brain out there. Might can get some of that. Eat, suck on the eyeballs a little bit, you know. Tongue, some people eat the tongue, you know. I mean, you get desperate. People, you hear people say, and that was one point I was going to make is, you know, you hear, oh, I would never eat that. You better watch out. Better watch out. Lord puts you in a situation where you'd be glad to get you a chunk of an ass's head. You know what I'm saying? I'm telling you, it can get bad. And that's where they are. They desperate. But, me personally, I know some other people might, I wouldn't pay 80 pieces of silver for a whole ass, you know, for the whole donkey, okay? Much less the head of one, but I ain't ever been where they are. See what I'm saying? That you have to be careful about, well, I can't believe so-and-so's doing that. Well, you might not be ever being where they are. Okay? So be careful about being quick to judge somebody when you see them doing something that you don't think you would ever do. Well, maybe you hadn't ever been where they are, and if you were, you might do something even worse than what they're doing. You just never know. It depends on the situation and how bad it gets and how long you have to be in that situation. But it also goes on to say, and the fourth part of a cab. Now, it doesn't say a cab. It says the fourth part of a cab. So like 1/4 of a cab of dove's dung. Now, I don't know all these measurements. Some of you that have a smartphone, maybe you can pull it up and find out. But in the margin of my Bible here, Scofield says one cab is 3.84 pints. Do y'all know if that's accurate or not? Do y'all know what a cab is? Besides, you know, one of them yellow cars, not that kind of cab, but I mean, as a unit of measurement, what a cab is, I don't know. 3.84 pints. Okay, well, yeah, well.
Well, if it was 3.84, 1/4 of that would be about 1 pint.
That's right, about 1 pint, that's right. All right, now here's the question, what are they doing with the dove's dung? Are they eating that, or is there some other purpose that they have for it? I have seen times where people used the dung of an animal as kindling. Like to start fires with and things like that. Are they using the dove's dung to start fires because they haven't been able to go out and gather wood? Well, maybe that's what they're doing. Or I guess they could be eating it. I don't know what they're doing with it. But at any rate, just a fourth part of a cab of dove's dung is selling for 5 pieces of silver. So that further shows you just how bad the situation got. It's really, really bad. These people are just desperate. They're scratching and clawing for anything and just hoping to make it through another day. I mean, that's how bad it's got. It really has. And in fact, we're going to see that it's even worse than anything we just read there in verse 25. Because it says in verse 26, "And as the king of Israel," that's Jehoram, "was passing by upon the wall," which is going to be the wall of the city, "there cried a woman unto him, saying, Help my lord, O king." This is a woman who is in desperation, and she's asking help of her king. "And he said, If the Lord do not help thee, whence shall I help thee?" If the Lord doesn't help you, then where am I going to get what you need? He says, "Whence shall I help thee?" If God can't help you, then how can I help you? How am I going to be able to help you? He says, "Out of the barn floor or out of the wine press," and the implied answer to both is no, because there's nothing in the barn floor. There's nothing in the wine press. I can't go over the barn floor and get you some grain. I can't go get what you need from the wine press because there's nothing there. I can't help you. There's really nothing that I can do for you, is the way I understand it. "And the king said unto her, What aileth thee?" What's your problem? What's going on? "And she answered, This woman said unto me, Give thy son, that we may eat him today, and we will eat my son tomorrow." Now that's bad. That's bad. That's somewhere, my mind doesn't comprehend that. Because, standing here tonight with a big, full, fat belly and having everything that I need, I can't imagine a situation where I would ever be willing to eat my son. I can't, I don't imagine any of you can imagine a situation like that. But I suspect before they got to where they were, they never imagined a situation like that either, where that would happen. But things got so bad, that they were willing, at least one of them, was willing to give their son to have something to eat. Now that's, thinking in my mind, I'm thinking, well, you ought to just starve to death. You ought to make the sacrifice. Just starve to death. Don't kill your son and eat your son. But you just have to understand, this is a horrible, terrible, hellish situation here. And I'm going to show you from the Bible why I believe it got to this place right here, why it happened like it did. But just look for a moment at verse 29. She goes on to say, "So we boiled my son and did eat him." That's just horrible. "And I said unto her, on the next day, give thy son that we may eat him. And she hath hid her son." So you got these two women that make an agreement. Today we eat my son, tomorrow we eat yours. They say, okay. Well, one gives her son, they boil it, they eat it, and then the next day rolls around and she says, all right, now it's time for you to give your son. And she's not willing to do that. She hides hers. And you can kind of understand why she's willing to hide her son. Other than the obvious that it's her son we're talking about, is the fact that she's just had a meal. Now, granted, it ain't a meal that anybody in their right mind would want to eat, but she's got a little something in your stomach. And listen, folks, reality is that when you get to literally not, we always, I'm starving to death. None of us have ever been starving to death, okay? When you get to starving to death, your mind don't work right, okay? And when you get food in you, you read in the Bible where people went, just some days, not really a long, long time without eating, but would go a little while without eating, and they get weak, and the Bible talks about how when they would eat, their eyes were enlightened. Just getting that food, that sustenance in your system, you begin to think a little clearly, and you're not as out of your mind as you were before. Well, this woman ate some of this woman's son the day before, so she's not quite as desperate as she once was, so she's not willing to give her son the next day. She's got him hid out, and she's not going to do that. But now let me show you something here. Go back to the book of Leviticus. And I'm going to show you why I believe this happened like it did. Because you say, you know, this is God's people here. Why in the world would something like this happen? Why would God let Israel, his people, get to the point where they're surrounded by Syrians, a bunch of heathens, and allow them to get so desperate that they would eat their own flesh and blood? Well, Leviticus chapter 26 is where I want you to turn. And just to kind of show you the context here, I want to go back to the beginning of the chapter, to verse 3, chapter 26, Leviticus 26, verse 3. God says, if, notice that word, because that's important here. We're under the law situation, and under the law, a lot of things were conditional with the Lord. And I think even under grace, certain things are conditional with the Lord, like draw nigh to God and he'll draw nigh to you. See, some of that stuff is conditional still, but under the law, there were a lot of things that were conditional. If ye walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase. The trees of the field shall yield their fruit. And just read on there. Notice all of the blessings, the things that God says he'll do for his people if they'll just be obedient to his commandments. All right, look at verse 14. He says, but if ye will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, and if ye shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhor my judgments, so that ye will not do all my commandments, but that ye break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and burning, and the burning of you, that shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart, and ye shall sow your seed. And just read on down through that. Verse 18, I will punish you seven times more for your sins. Verse 21 continues on with these plagues. And look, verse 27. And if ye will not for all this hearken unto me, but walk contrary unto me, then I will walk contrary unto you also in fury. And I will chastise you seven times for your sins, and ye shall eat the flesh of your sons, and the flesh of your daughters shall ye eat. See that? Now, let me show you just a couple more here. Go to the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 28. Can you already kind of understand now why things got the way they did there? Because this is Israel. This is God's people. And he told them, if you do right, then this is what I'm going to do for you. But if you do wrong, this is what I'm going to do for you. Obviously, Jehoram, being a wicked king that he was, did not regard the commandments of God like he was supposed to. And he walked in the sins of Jeroboam. It's what the scripture says. Which was an idolatrous king and led the people into idolatry. So they're messed up right now. Israel's messed up. And you know what's happening because they're not doing what God told them to do? They're being punished for their sin just like God said he was going to punish them. But Deuteronomy 28, verse 52. And you can go back up earlier in this thing. I'm not going to take the time to read all of it, but it's kind of the same scenario. The chapter begins out by God saying, I'll bless you, I'll bless you, I'll bless you, I'll bless you if you do right, but if you don't, this is what I'm going to do to you. In verse 52, well, look at this, just to get better context, verse 49. The Lord shall bring a nation against thee from far. Well, he brought the Syrians against them, where we're studying, right? The Syrians besieged the city. The Lord shall bring a nation against thee from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand, a nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. And he shall eat the fruit of thy cattle and the fruit of thy land until thou be destroyed, which also shall not leave thee either corn, wine, or oil, or the increase of thy kine, or flocks of thy sheep, until he have destroyed thee. And he shall besiege thee in all thy gates, until thy high and fenced walls come down, wherein thou trustedest throughout all thy land. And he shall besiege thee in all thy gates throughout all thy land, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. And thou shalt eat the fruit of thine own body, the flesh of thy sons and of thy daughters, which the Lord thy God hath given thee in the siege. See that? You're going to eat your sons and daughters in the siege, is what he says. In the siege. And in the straitness, wherewith thine enemies shall distress thee. And we could read on and see some more, but that should suffice to understand what's going on here. You know, even though it doesn't say it specifically in the text, you just have to understand that the way God dealt with Israel in the Old Testament is if they did right, God blessed them. If they did wrong and walked in rebellion and didn't care about his word, and especially if they got into idolatry, then what would he do? He would punish them for what they did. And God told them, before it ever got going real good, that's how it was going to be. God said, I'm just letting you know up front, this is how it's going to be. If you'll do right, then I'll bless you. I'll give you rain and all the crops will grow and your cattle will flourish and everything will be good. But if you don't, then here's what's going to happen. Bad stuff is going to happen to you. And it's going to get so bad, God said to them, that you're going to actually eat your own flesh and blood. And that's exactly what you're reading right here in 2 Kings chapter 6. You got a wicked man on the throne. Jehoram, the king of Israel, is a wicked man. Maybe not as bad as his father, but hey, that's irrelevant. He's a bad man. He's a wicked man that doesn't care about God. He's not leading the people the way he should. And generally, when you had a situation like that in the Old Testament, the people followed the leadership. If the king was a wicked man, then the people followed his leadership, and they were wicked and rebellious against God. So what's happened here, I believe, is that because of their wickedness, God has brought this on these people, just like he told them he was going to do. The city's surrounded, they're in a siege, and it's got so bad that they're eating their own flesh and blood. Now, 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 30, and it came to pass when the king heard the words of the woman, which, back to that point I was just talking about, that shows you, or it should show you, what God can allow to happen to a nation if he chooses to. Just because right now we're a land of prosperity and everything's good here in the United States doesn't mean that it has to always be that way. God can seriously upset the apple cart, I'm here to tell you, and get us to the point in this land right here. It's hard for us to fathom something like that because we're so prosperous and we've been so prosperous for so many years. We just can't see a day and time when this country could be flat broke and busted and the people of this country in utter and complete desperation. But I'm telling you, that's where we could be if God decides for it to be that way. And it won't take him real long to do it either. Won't take him real long to do it. What would determine something like that? Why would God do something like that to a country? Well, we just talked about it. If a country decides We don't want God. We don't care about God. We don't need God. We don't care what His Word says. We're just going to do what we want to do. Then I'm telling you, there comes a point with God where He says, enough is enough. That's what He does. And by the way, whatever happens at that point, we deserve. If we've decided we don't need Him. Verse 30, and it came to pass when the king heard the words of the woman that he rent his clothes, which, you know, that was something they did a lot when they were upset about something. They'd tear their clothes. And he passed by upon the wall, and the people looked, and behold, he had sackcloth within upon his flesh. Underneath that outer garment, he had some sackcloth, which I don't know the best way I know to describe that is like an old croaker sack or something, like an old burlap sack. It's kind of like sackcloth, and that was something that people would generally wear in a time of mourning and sadness, and many people would put it on when they were trying to seek God about something. And I do believe, as crazy as it sounds, and I'm going to show you hopefully why I say that, but I do think that things had gotten so bad that Jehoram was actually thinking a little bit about God at this time. I believe that. And one reason is because of the sackcloth he's got on. But notice, verse 31, then he said, God, do so and more also to me, if the head of Elisha, the son of Shaphat, shall stand on him this day. He sees this thing with these women, hears about it, and who's he get mad at? He gets mad with Elisha. And he says, I'm telling you, before this day's over, I'm going to have his head. I'm going to cut his head off. He believed that either Elisha was responsible for what's going on here, or that somehow Elisha was not doing what he needed to do to get this thing turned around here. But in either case, he's putting the blame and the responsibility on Elisha. Now look on, verse 32, but Elisha sat in his house, and the elders sat with him, the elders of Israel, and the king sent a man from before him, but ere the messenger came to him, before he came to Elisha, Elisha said to the elders, see how this son of a murderer, he's talking about the king of Israel. Why would he call him a son of a murderer? Because that's what his daddy was. That's what Ahab was. Just a good for nothing is what he was. Him and his wife were responsible for the death of a whole lot of prophets of God, if y'all remember that, and other people as well. But see how this son of a murderer hath sent to take away mine head? The messenger hadn't even got there. So how does Elisha know what's going on? Evidently, he's plugged in with God enough, the Lord's letting him know this. He's revealing these things to him ahead of time, which he was a prophet, and that's the way God dealt with his prophets. He would let them know these things. And he lets him know, so he says to the elders, this son of a murderer has sent to take away mine head. Look, when the messenger cometh, shut the door and hold him fast at the door. Is not the sound of his master's feet behind him? Don't let him in, because he's just ahead of his master. His master will be here in a little bit to take my head off. So you stop him at the door. He wanted them to be his bodyguards at this point. Stand there and not let them in. Verse 33, and while he yet talked with them, with the elders, behold, the messenger came down unto him, and he said, the messenger said, behold, this evil is of the Lord. And he is speaking on behalf of who? The messenger's not speaking on behalf of himself. He's a messenger. He's speaking on behalf of the king. So this is the king's message to Elisha. Behold, this evil is of the Lord. What should I wait for the Lord any longer? You know what that shows me? It shows me he had been waiting for the Lord. Because he says, what should I wait for the Lord any longer? It's like, you know, this thing's of God. I've been waiting on you to give me some kind of word from God about this thing and waiting and waiting, and I get nothing, so I'm tired of it, and I'm fixed to cut your head off. It's as if he's decided, look, all this time I've been waiting on you, because he realized evidently that God was speaking through Elisha, that he was God's man. So he's connecting Elisha with God. And because Elisha hadn't brought some kind of word to change this thing up or brought a word from God to say it was going to be better, be different, and now he's had this situation with these women eating their kids, he's like, look, I'm not waiting any longer. There's no need to wait around on you anymore. And he's going to kill Elisha. That's his intentions anyway, is to have his head cut off. But to me, it shows that things had gotten so bad that this fella had actually started thinking about God a little bit, because he's got his sackcloth on and he's upset with Elisha, and he talks about not waiting for the Lord anymore. Obviously, he's been thinking a little bit about God. But I want you to notice now, well, we ain't going to have time to get into it tonight. We'll just we'll pick it up next time. We'll see what happens in chapter 7, how the we'll get to Paul Harvey. We'll get the rest of the story later on. But any questions about what we looked at here tonight? Any questions? I believe what the man said about the evil being of the Lord was absolutely correct. I believe it was of the Lord. I believe God allowed every bit of that to happen to them. All right. I appreciate y'all being here. If y'all will stand up, we'll go home. Just out of sheer curiosity, I already know for a couple of how many of you stayed up last night and watched the end of it? Y'all going to stay up that late tonight? Not. But this is the reason y'all don't get mad at me. Let me ask you this. When was the last time you stayed up at 2 o'clock in the morning praying for a soul to get saved?
Well,